We're doing the Ein Yaakov, and we were holding Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. We were continuing with quotes that Rav Yochanan was quoting until now in the name of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, and we'll get back to that. Now this is a quote in the name of Rabbi Yossi. V'amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yossi. Rav Yochanan quotes in the name of Rabbi Yossi. Whenever the Gemara tells us Mishum, it means in the name of, but that he didn't hear directly from him. When it says Amar Amar, so then it will often mean he heard directly from him, but not necessarily either. Because sometimes the Gemara skips generations. Meaning, let's say we have a quote that he heard from him, five times. The Gemara isn't going to give us more than three names. The Gemara is going to skip until the maximum the Gemara usually quotes is three names. Even if it means skipping many people along the way. So here Rabbi Yochanan heard from Rabbi Yossi, but because it says Mishum, it's like Mishem, in the name of, he didn't hear directly from him. Anything that God said for good, afilu al tnai, even though God cushioned it with a condition, lo chazal bo, Hashem never took it back. Minalan, where do we see this from? Moshe Rabbeinu. Shenemar, by Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem said, the Jews sinned with the Egel, and I'm going to punish them, I'm going to banish them. And Hashem said to Moshe, heref mimeni vashmidem, let go of me, I want to destroy them. Vemche et sheman, and I'll annihilate their name. Ve'esot chalekoi gadol atzum v'rav mimenu, and I'll make you, Hashem said to Moshe, into a great nation that'll be even greater than the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu davened to Hashem, and Hashem did not annihilate the Jewish people. Even though Moshe asked for mercy over this, and Moshe was successful in undoing the decree, nonetheless, Hashem fulfilled the promise that Hashem said, I'll make you into a greater nation than the Jewish people. That part came true. Even though the first part didn't come true, the second part came true. Shneimal, the pasuk says in Divrei Yamim, Uvnei Gershom v'Eliezer, Uvnei Moshe Gershom v'Eliezer, V'yubnei Eliezer Chavya Arosh, Uvnei Chavya Ravu Lemala, V'tani Rav Yosef Lemala Meshishim Ribo. And the pasuk says that Moshe had two children, Gershom and Eliezer. Eliezer had a son, Rechavya, and Rechavya had a tremendous number of children who were greater than. So, what is greater than? Rav Yosef says it's greater than the 600,000 Jews. That Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately became a great nation within the Jewish people. Moshe Rabbeinu had more than 600,000 children. Atya Reviya Reviya, how do we know this? Because it says Ravu Lemala, and it says Ktiva Achar Ravu Lemala. Ktivatam Peru Vishutzu Vayirbu. The term Rav, Ravu, is used both in terms of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people. So we see that Moshe Rabbeinu, the Gemara learns, had grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He ultimately numbered more than 600,000. Now, this Gemara, when read simply, it's easy to understand. We could even align it with other Gemaras that we learn. We know that Chazal taught us that in heavens they only like to give, they don't take back. They don't usually like taking back. They'll only give. So if Shemaim said, if from Shemaim Hashem said something good's going to happen, so the Gemara says Hashem doesn't take it back, even though there was a condition. But in a second, we're going to ask questions about this. Yeah?
Yeah, I feel exactly like that question, because there is a story that says about the money that Rabbi returned to heaven.
No, there, the Gemara says, on that story, the Gemara says that the fact that they took it back is a bigger nais than the fact that they gave it. Because in Shemaim, they don't take things back. That was an exception. Over there, by that Gemara, the Gemara says it. Now, the question is, how does this work? Because we know that, in general, the Torah gives us promises, and the Torah gives us conditions. The Torah says, if you keep the Torah, then five of you will be able to chase a hundred, five will chase 100, and all the enemies will fall before you. And what happens when we don't keep the Torah? So then if we don't say, well, Hashem said a good thing will happen, and even if you don't keep the condition, it happens. We find other examples of that, where the Torah gives us conditions, and if we don't keep the condition, we don't get the good. And we say even more than that. We say that when Hashem gives a prophecy for good, ordinarily Hashem doesn't rescind that prophecy. But how come we find sometimes that there are prophecies for good and they don't seem to be fulfilled? Because we say that there's, so to speak, an invisible condition. When Hashem says something good will happen, there's this condition, assuming things stay status quo, assuming you live up to your end of the deal. And that's how we explain why sometimes it doesn't happen, because we didn't live up to our end of the deal. So how does all this work with our Gemara? So we could leave it at a question, and the question is a very strong question. We could try to answer on a spiritual level. We could say that maybe the blessing is still there in potential. When God says something good will happen, so the potential is there, and that we could understand with the concepts that we've been discussing, that when something is said, then that brings that in and of itself brings it one step closer to the world. That the Ramban writes that when the prophets said a prophecy, then it was closer to coming true. When they did an action, a sign, that's why we find the prophets are always doing things. That brings it, like seals it within this world. An action was done to seal the prophecy into happening in this world. So that can answer it on one level. Others want to answer it a little bit differently, that there's a difference in how the condition is phrased. Sometimes Hashem says, this good thing will happen. Like over here, Hashem said, let go of me. I want to wipe them out, and I'll make you into a great nation. Hashem didn't say it as a condition, really. The understanding is that there's a condition. Hashem said, I'll wipe them out, and then I'll make you in place of them. But Hashem really said two things. Hashem said, let go of me and let me wipe them out, and then I'll be able, how will I continue the Jewish people? By making you great. Do you mind closing the heat? Thank you. I think everyone here is way too hot. Are you guys want the heat on? Is anyone?
It's for me, no.
Okay, fine. I don't care.
Okay.
Who wants the heater? No, okay.
So there is another understanding that that it depends on how the condition is given. Sometimes the condition is given as a condition, and then really the condition is binding. And sometimes, like over here, Hashem says two things, and we call it a condition, but really Hashem said two separate things that seem connected. And then Hashem says, even if you didn't keep one, once I said a thing for good, I keep it. Rabbi Yochanan now is going back to quotes from Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. The Gemara is quoting more things Rabbi Yochanan quoted from Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Kasha tarbut ra'a betoch beito shel adam yoter memelchemet Gog u'Magog. It is more difficult when a person has bad education within his home, when a person has bad influences in his home, it is more difficult than the ultimate war of Gog u'Magog, when all 70 nations unite to fight Israel. Gog u'Magog is gematria 70. We have on tradition that there are going to be these two great kings, Gog and Magog. They'll go to war. Ultimately, they'll unify and come against us. And everyone will join them. All the nations will join them against us. So you have all the nations coming against little Israel. And ultimately, Hashem will save us from that. But things are going to be very difficult then. And Chazal tell us that the difficulties a person can experience within his own home are more difficult than that great war. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Mizmor le David, a song of praise that David HaMelech sang bevocho when he was on the run mipenei Avshalom bino, when he was on the run from Avshalom his son. Avshalom had a rebellion and he was coming chasing after David, trying to take the throne from David, and it seemed like he was being very successful. Most of the Jewish people followed Avshalom, and now David's in danger. What's going to be? His son is coming after him. V'chtiv batrei, and how does David HaMelech describe this situation? Hashem marabu tzarai rabim kamim alai. He turns to God and he says, whoa, how difficult are my difficulties? How heavy are, how great are my difficulties? There are so many and so great that come upon me. So he's describing it as being excruciatingly difficult. V'ilu gavei melchemet Gog u'Magog. But with regard to the war with Gog u'Magog, what does David HaMelech say? Why are all these nations getting all excited? He's describing it as if calmly. Well, what's all the excitement about? Why are these nations speaking worthless things? They're just coming to fight us, as though it's not a big deal. So we see, but David doesn't say, oh boy, it's so difficult. No, doesn't say that about Gog u'Magog. So we see that compared to the difficulties one can experience within his home, Gog u'Magog is nothing. When we were looking for chinuch for our son, I consulted with many rabbanim, and one rav told me, set up your own school. So I said, if I set up my own school, I'm not going to be able to learn anything. That's it. My life's over. I become principal. That's my life. So he said, and what's the problem with that? So I said, I don't think that's what I'm supposed to do with my life, to spend my life being principal of an elementary school. So he said, well, what's so terrible? I said, it's going to take all my time. So he said, believe me, if you don't get the chinuch you want with your kids, it takes even more time. But, sometimes it's worth investing to set up a system that'll be good for your child, because in the long run, if a child doesn't get educated the way you'd like, sometimes it takes much more work to undo it. So David HaMelech was in a position where two sons were brought up improperly within his home, Avshalom and Adoniah ben Hagit, and they both rebelled against him. And David HaMelech says about that, Ma rabu tzarai, my difficulties about growth are so terrible, and I didn't bring up my kids correctly, and that's why Rabin Kamim and I, our great people, are coming upon me. Chazal tell us that historically a lot of people erred in educating their children, starting with Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, Chazal say, wasn't tough enough with Yishmael, and that's why Yishmael turned out the way he did. Mizmor le David. David HaMelech sings a song, Bevocho, when he's on the run, Mipenei Avshalom Beno, from Avshalom his son. So the Gemara questions, why does he begin it as a song? Mizmor le David, a song to David. Kina le David mibaylei. He should have said, this is a lamentation that David is composing. What's the song? What are you singing about? Your own son turns up to kill you, and you're singing a song. What's there to sing about? Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Avi Shalom. Rabbi Shimon, the son of Avi Shalom, said. Now, guys sometimes come and ask me what name to name themselves. So sometimes guys want to name themselves and they become a ger, Avshalom. So I always recommend take Avishalom. You see here in the Gemara, Avishalom was a name that the Tanam, the Amoraim used. Avshalom, I don't know if it's so used. We find one person in Tanakh whose name is Avshalom, and he was a pretty bad person. So we just learned about him, we're learning about him. But Rabbi Shimon, the son of Avishalom, that seems to be a name that was used, he says, Leman davar dumeh le'adam sheyatza alav shtar chov. If a person, someone comes out and he says, you owe me a lot of money. Kodem shifra'o, before he pays up that money, hayatzev. So he was sad. He's got to pay it. Lachar shifra'o, after he's paid it up, samach, then he's happy. I got rid of the money I owe. Afkan David, so to hear David, kivan shamalo kadosh baruch hu, when Hashem said to him, you've sinned, David, and now you're going to be punished. Hineni mekim alecha ra'ami beitecha. I will arise from within your own home. There are going to be bad things happening to you. Hayatzev. So David was sad. Amal David said, Shema eved omamzehu. Maybe one of my servants will rebel against me. Maybe it'll be a mamzer. Delo chaisalai, that he won't have any mercy on me. Kevan dechazad Avshalom. Once he saw that it was Avshalom, his son, samach, he was happy. He said, oh, it could have been worse. Could have been someone who won't have any mercy on me. That's why over here he said a song, because ordinarily a son has mercy on the father. And here there's a lot to discuss. Firstly, why does the Gemara assume that a slave or a mamzer is not going to have mercy? It seems that one can say either on a spiritual level that one who's in this position is going to be less merciful. A slave we could understand, after he's been subservient to the master for many years, he wants to take revenge, even if it's a master like David. Chazal tell us that the Avadim, the slaves in general, were people who they were lowlifes. Chazal said you don't leave your wife around when the slave is there. All kinds of things Chazal said about a person's own servants.
Is it only Eved Kenani or Jewish slaves?
It seems like an Eved Kenani. Mamzer, so that's an interesting question. Do we assume that a mamzer is less fit spiritually? It seems that we do. There's a discussion in the Gemara when Eliezer was standing by the well, and he said, the girl that offers me water, she'll be the wife for Yitzchak. The Gemara says, Eliezer asked him properly. Who knows what girl will offer him water? Maybe she's not fitting for Eliezer, that's not enough.
Yitzchak.
Maybe she's blind for Yitzchak, maybe she's blind and you won't be able to tell. You just came to town just because she's offering you water. So Tosus over there asks, what about when Osniel ben Kenaz, you have Osniel ben Kenaz, Kalev wants to marry off his daughter, So he says, whoever will be able to conquer Kiryas Sefer, whoever will be able to bring back all the laws that we forgot in the morning of over Moshe, he's going to be able to marry my daughter. So the question is, why didn't the Gemara enumerate him as one of the people that asked him properly? Maybe it'll be a mamzer. Maybe it'll be a person that you're not even supposed to marry. How do you know who's going to bring back the halachos? So one of the answers that's offered over there is, no, mamzer is never going to reach that level. We find that the Gemara tells us a mamzer could be a huge Talmud Chacham. You guys know what a mamzer is, yeah? A bastard. Someone who comes from a relationship that's biblically prohibited with the punishment of kares. A person who lives with his mother, with his sister, with his daughter. That can bring a mamzer. A person lives with a married woman. That child's going to be a mamzer. So over there, one of the answers that's offered is, we assume that a mamzer is never going to attain such spiritual heights. Over here we see the Gemara said that David HaMelech was concerned, who are the people that are going to be most vicious against him? An Eved or a Mamzer? Who was Avshalom? Let's pause for a second and remind ourselves. His mother, Macha, right? She was a non-Jew. So, theoretically, if David would have taken her, and she would have had this child, so he won her at war. She was the son would have been an Eved. But he wasn't. Because why? Because he married her. She was an Eshet Yifas Toar. Right?
Huh?
She was an Eshet Yifas Toar, a woman that became, he married at war. And really, an Eshet Yifas Toar, the child could very easily, it's very easy, an Eshet Yifas Toar, the Torah doesn't limit the person to a woman that's single. Meaning, it's very similar to a mamzer. He's not a mamzer, the Torah permitted him to marry her. But nonetheless, it's not exactly the ideal relationship. And Chazal warned us that if one takes an Eshet Yifas Toar, she won't like him. She won't like the Torah. And the son won't go in his footsteps just like Avshalom did.
So
Avshalom is a classical case of the fruits of a marriage where the parents don't really agree philosophically. And the children aren't going to go in their footsteps.
So Martha, was she converted to Judaism?
She converted. She agreed to convert. But what kind of conversion is that? How much? Yeah, it wasn't under force, but it wasn't like she had such a better option at that time. So Avshalom, nonetheless, when David sees it's him, he's happy. And here there's a discussion among the commentaries. It seems like Avshalom was going to kill David. What's he so happy about? So the commentaries say David didn't know that. David was happy because he thought he'd have mercy on him. But that doesn't mean David was right.
And what about
Adoniah? Chazal say his mother brought him up the same way Macha brought up Avshalom. The Navi says, "V'oto gidla acharei Avshalom." Chazal say it means that his mother brought him up the same way Avshalom's mother brought him up badly, the same bad chinuch. V'amar Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai.
Was he this from a non-Jewish girl?
No, I don't think right. Rabbi Yochanan quotes another saying from Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai: "Mutal litgot bar Shem ba'olam hazeh." You're allowed to pick a fight with the wicked in this world. Shneimar, because the pasuk says, those who leave the Torah, yalelu rasha, they praise the rasha. B'shomrei Torah, but those who keep the Torah, yitgaru vam, they'll chepper the rasha. They're going to pick a fight with him. So the simple reading of this Gemara is, you see a rasha, you want to start a fight with him, if you're a righteous person, go ahead, start a fight with him. So the Gemara is going to say, wait a second. Firstly, the Gemara supports this. Tanya Namiachi, we have another Tanai quote. Rabbi Dostai bar Matun omer, mutal litgot bar Hashem ba'olam hazeh. Rabbi Dostai bar Matun also taught us you're allowed to fight them in this world. Shneimar, the pasuk says, "Ozvei Torah yalu rasha." The same verse. The im nafshecha adam lomar, and if someone whispers to you and he says, "Vaktiv," but the verse says, "The David al titchal b'merim al tekaneh b'osev." Now the pasuk says, "Don't be jealous with those that do bad." Emolo, so tell him that's not what the pasuk means. Misheli bonak v'omerken, only someone whose heart is bothering him, he says that. Ela, but that's not what the verse means. The verse means, don't try to be like them. That's what Wask means, don't be jealous of them. And I'll prove to you, the Tana says, the Pasuk says, don't be jealous of the sinners, but those that are God-fearing. So you see, jealous means to emulate them. Doesn't mean jealous to fight them. Now the Gemara is going to bring a contradiction to this thing. The first quote said, you see Rishayim, you want to take him on, take him on. Now the Gemara says Eini, and you should know in the Gemara there are two words that are spelled identically, Eini and Ini, and they have slightly different meanings. When we learn the Ini, we'll once have to discuss it. The Gemara basically is asking, is this so? It's just different levels of that question. But Rav Yitzchak taught us, Im ra'ita rasha shasham sacheket lo, if you see someone who's wicked and it seems like he's being successful, al titkarebo, don't take him on. Shneimar, because the pasuk says, Yachilu derachav becholet, his ways will be successful always. So the pasuk, the Rav Yitzchak taught us, don't take him on. Velo, not only that, el shezuche bedin, you'll try to take him to court, he'll win. Shneimar, maro mishpatecha minigdo. David HaMelech describes that the wicked seem to have it as though God keeps the justice away from them. They get away with anything. Velo, not only that, el shezuche bedin. David HaMelech describes how they see their enemies fall down. The wicked are so successful, the pasuk says, Kol tzorav yafiach behem, anyone who tries to stop them, they blow them away. So David HaMelech is describing that if you want to take on the wicked, you should know God sometimes gives them periods of success where they could knock everyone down and everything seems to be going easy. So one source said, you see the wicked, if you're a righteous person, you could take him on. The other source said, you see the wicked, you see them successful, stay away. You have no guarantee you'll succeed against them. So how do we rectify these two? The Gemara's first answer is, lo kasha, that's not difficult. Habemili today, habemili dishmaya. One's talking about your issues, one's talking about heaven's issues. If you have a neighbor who's wicked and he moves the fence over and you see he's successful in everything he does, we're not guaranteeing you that you should start up with him. Because in things that have to do with you, David HaMelech already told us, sometimes the wicked get away with anything. If it's an issue of mili dishmaya, things that have to do with heaven, you have a neighbor and he wants to make a party where he's going to serve non-kosher food and he's going to invite Jews to that party, there you have the guarantee that they said, no, if you're a God-fearing person, then you should take him on. No one's promising you'll win, but you should take him on. That's the first. That's the first answer to the Gemara. So you go over to the neighbor and you explain to him what he's doing is wrong. You try to convince him not to do it. The first answer to the Gemara is that it depends on whether it's my issue or God's issue. God's issue I take up even against the wicked. Vibaitema. Second answer. Havabimidi dishmaya. That both quotes were talking about God's issue. ולא קשה, הרא בשרשע שם שחקת לו, ששם שחק לו, אבל רשע שאין השם שחק לו. Second answer is no. It depends on how successful you seem. Both quotes were dealing with God's issue. Both are talking about the neighbor who's making a party serving non-kosher food. One's talking about a neighbor that you see whatever he does, he's successful. Omer's visiting him. Livni's sending him gifts for New Year's. So you see he's being successful in everything he does. So then the Gemara says, even in heavenly matters, stay away. And if you see that he's not necessarily being successful, he's just trying to get away with doing something bad, then you could take him on. So that's the second answer the Gemara gives. Maybe that's the difference between the two quotes. And if you want, I'll give you a third answer the Gemara says. Both are talking about the wicked that you see them being successful. The difference is, are you completely pious or are you just relatively pious? If you're a complete tzaddik, so then even if you see the wicked and they're doing something that they seem to be getting away with anything, you could take them on. But if you're just a righteous person, but you yourself have your own faults, then don't come near. Who said you're going to last? The Amar Ravuna, because Ravuna taught us, "My dichtiv." What does Chavakuk mean when he says, "Lama tabit bogdim tachish bevala rasha tzaddik nimenu"? Chavakuk asks God, "How come you see that the wicked overtake those that are more righteous than them?" Do the wicked really overtake the righteous? Doesn't the verse say, Hashem lo yazvenu biyado, God doesn't let the righteous be taken by the wicked? And the pasuk says, lo yune la tzadik kol aven, the righteous never suffer iniquity. Ela tzadik nimenu bolea. But what Chavakuk was teaching us is that the wicked will consume those that are more righteous than them. If all you have over your neighbor is that you're more righteous than him, then you can't take him on. But if you are tzaddik gamur, if you're a complete tzaddik, you've done nothing wrong, then ain't no bolea. So basically, once we reach to this last answer, what's the Gemara telling us? Stay away. Don't touch this. Who could say about himself, I'm pure? No one. So when the Gemara gives this last answer, the Gemara is basically saying, you see someone wicked being successful, even if he's going to do something, if it's a question of taking him on and endangering yourself, you don't stay away. There's no issue. There's the Gemara in giving this answer basically completely disqualified the first opinion. Well, I said, don't take him on. And then the Gemara gives us another answer. No, you could take him on. There's an exception when you see him exceptionally successful. Rav Yochanan quoted Rav Shimon bar Yochai, "Gedola shimusha shel Torah yoter melimuda." Serving Torah is greater than learning Torah. Meaning, if you could sit by a rabbi and learn, you've learned one level. If you could be with him and see how he's doing things and help him and be close to him in his day-to-day dealings, you can learn a much higher level. Shneimar, as we see, the description of the prophet Elisha was, Pol Isha ben Shafata sheyatzak maim al yedei Eliyahu. They said, when they asked, is there a prophet around here? They said, yeah, Elisha's here. Elisha's the one that poured water for Eliyahu. They didn't describe Elisha as the one that spent years learning by Eliyahu. They didn't say that. Because learning, a lot of people can learn. But to be close to a person and see him on a day-to-day basis, that's where you learn much more. Here our sages taught us it is greater to serve a Rebbe than to learn by him. This is, I find this Gemara difficult. The Rambam says, this is brought in Halacha, that a Rebbe shouldn't be cruel to his students. He should let them serve him. So that's what it says. It says if you want to help the students, so sometimes let them serve you. And I always have a hard time doing this. I personally, when I build my sukkah, I build my own sukkah. Or I'll call friends and build a sukkah. I'll never call guys from the machon. I think that it takes a student to be on a certain level to be worthy of doing this. Meaning if the student feels this is a privilege, I want to do this, and he chases after it, then this is relevant. But if there's any room for the Rebbe to think, well, he's going to be grudge about it, so then I don't think the Rebbe can do this. That's what I think. And I think that I don't know how many people really, really want to do it. I know when I was learning by Rabbi Feinstein, I'd run after him and beg him, when can I give him a ride? Because I knew I learned much more giving him rides than I could learn in the shir. In the shir, I learned one thing. Now, when I gave him rides, or I got to go with him, I learned much more. Rav Avram Shapiro Zatzal also. This is a tip for you guys. Whenever he was at a wedding, you have to have a little bit of chutzpah. A little bit, you gotta know how to... Lo abay shan lamed. I wouldn't call it chutzpah. If you're too bashful, you can't learn. I'd always go to his driver and say, I'm headed the same way he is. Can I have a ride? And what's he going to say? No? So I always used to get rides with him, and then I got to see how he behaved and got to learn from him. And there were many things. When you're with someone big, so you could learn a lot when you're by them. I'll give you a small example. Rabbi Feinstein would always approve giving rides to other people. He wouldn't say, I'm in the car, so don't squish me. Whenever he'd get in the car, so there was always a quandary, who's going to sit where? He'd always move to the middle seat, where there's a bump, where no one wants to sit. So everyone always let him get in first, out of respect. And he'd always go to the most uncomfortable seat, so there should never be an issue who sits there. He'd go there. I can tell you many stories about him, but Chazal told us if you're by the person, you could learn much, much more than just from the book. The Meiri writes that we have a saying, "Lo mipi asfarim anu lomdim, ela mipi asofrim." We don't learn from the books, we learn from the authors. You want to learn, go to the author. Don't go to his book. Try to get close to the author. And I can tell you that most people don't take advantage of this. When Rav Kapach Zatzal was alive, so I used to go to his shiurim, and after the shiur, I'd walk him home. And no one else walked him home. Everyone would come to hear his shiur, and after shiur, everyone would go home, and he'd walk home alone. So I got to walk him home, I got to learn from him. and there were other rabbis. Rav Simcha Cohen Cook was in Jerusalem once. So I was a bachelor. No, nephew. So he's the rabbi of Rehovot. So we were once at a wedding together. So I asked if I could have a ride with him. I didn't have to get to Rehovot. What do I have to do in Rehovot? Nothing. But I have the ability to get a ride with such a big rabbi for an hour. So I asked if I could have a ride with him. So he said, sure. So I hopped in the taxi. So it was late at night. I figured I'll figure out how to get back from Rehovot later. I can tell you to this day, I have responses that I discussed with him, halachic issues. I don't know if people know, but there are many, many halachic issues that I was able to ask him then during that hour-long car ride, because I got to sit with him in the car. So I'm giving you small examples, but you should know that you just got to keep your eyes open for it. If you want, you can take advantage of it at Rabbi Gon. He walks home alone many evenings. Many evenings he walks home alone. I've many times, when we don't have class, when I have time, I grab the opportunity and I walk him home and we get to talk along the way. So there are many people you can take advantage of. Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, There are many times he goes places. Today it's a little bit harder to find, but even today there are ways of finding times when you could get a hold of him. Today it's more difficult with him specifically. But if you have a rabbi who you want to learn by, so then the trick is to find the times. And sometimes you could offer it to the rabbi. Chazal told us, our Gemara, being there, shimusha, the service of Torah, will teach you more than learning in the classes. I had a car in the Lower East Side for the primary purpose of driving Rabbi Feinstein. That was the only reason I brought a car there. I pay parking and do everything because I knew I could learn a lot that way. Rabbi Yitzchak le'av Nachman. Rabbi Yitzchak said to Rav Nachman, "My time aloati mar lebeke nishta letzluye." So Rabbi Yitzchak is talking to Rav Nachman, and your first name is Mar. Whenever someone refers to someone else as Mar in the Gemara, it means that the other person was the Rebbe. So Rav Yitzchak asks Rav Nachman, "Why didn't the Rebbe come to shul yesterday for prayer?" Amale lo yachilna. He said, "I couldn't. He was weak. He wasn't feeling up to it." Amale, so he asked his Rebbe, "Lechanfe lemar asara belitzle. Maybe we should get 10 people to your home. We'll have a minyan by our home. We'll pray that way." Amale trichali milta. He said, "I'm not feeling up to that either. That's going to be too hard for me. You can't bring 10 people into my home. I'm not up to that." So he asked him, "Leimale mar leshalucha detzibura. Maybe we should tell the shaliach tzibur, leiti veleida lemar beidna dematzi tzibura, that he should let you know when the tzibur is praying, when is the congregation praying, and then you'll be able to pray at the same time they're praying." Amale, the student is pushing and pushing. So Rav Nachman finally said to Rav Yitzchak, "My kuli hai, what's the fuss? What are you making such a big deal about?" Amale, so he said to him, "Damar Rav Yochanan mishum Rav Shimon bar Yochai." Rav Yochanan quoted Rav Shimon bar Yochai. "My tichtiv, what does the pasuk mean? Vanit fil tilcha Hashem et ratzon." David Amar said to Hashem, "My prayer should be at a time of goodwill." When is the time of goodwill? At the time that the congregation prays. Rav Yossi Rav Chanina gives another source. We have another Tanakh quote that says the same thing. No, this we'll deal with in a second. So the time that's considered a time of goodwill is the time that the congregation is praying. This is in halacha also. Let's say a person can't make it to minyan. For whatever reason, he won't be able to go. He's ill at home, or he's ill and he's contagious, so it's not fair to go to shul and get other people sick. For whatever reason, he can't make it to shul. So halacha is that he should try to daven at the same time the congregation is davening. Because then his prayer, so to speak, is aligned with theirs. Tanya Namiyachi, we have another Tanakh source that says, Rabbi Natan Umer, Rabbi Natan told us. You guys know who Rabbi Natan was. Rabbi Natan was the Chacham in Babylon. He was the equivalent of Rebbe in Israel. When Rebbe compiled the Mishnayot in Israel, Rabbi Natan compiled the Babylonian version in Babylon. So Rabbi Natan said, "Meinayin shein HaKadosh Baruch Hu moes b'tviyatan shel rabim?" How do we know that God is never disgusted with the prayer of the masses? You could have 10 people standing together. Each one has their faults. You think God looks at them and says, "People like this, what do I have to do with them?" No. God says, "They're a congregation. I look at them positively." Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "Henkel kabir velo yimas, v'chtiv padav shalom nashim mikrav li v'kumer." Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now the Gemara is giving another thing that we learn from these verses. Kol ha'osek b'torah v'gmilut chasadim u'mitpalel im ha'tzibur. Whoever deals with Torah, gemilut chesed, acts of kindness, and prays with the congregation, I consider it as though he redeemed me and my children from among the nations. What are the three pillars? Torah, gemilut chesed, and praying with the congregation. We have to think about the value of praying with the tzibur. We're going to see a few gemarot about this. This is a very special thing that Hashem does for us, and we're going to learn the concept more deeply in Drashot Aran. When we stand together, so we started discussing this last week, one could say that all our faults should combine. And it doesn't work that way. And we explained it with the example of a football team. If you have a... You guys play football? Soccer? Soccer? Okay. Soccer team. Okay. So you have a soccer team. One man's a goalie. He's good at being a goalie, but he can never score a goal. If he had to stand up against the defense of the other team, he wouldn't last. Another guy's good at the offensive, but he'd never be a good goalie. The third guy, he's good on defense. Yeah, he's good on defense, but he can't go on the offense. He'll never be able to score a goal. You put them together as a team, and each one has their strengths. Each one with his strength, the team can be a winning team. You could look at the team and say, well, he's not a good goalie, and he's not good at offense, and he's not good at defense. It's not how we look at it. We say each one has their strength. The same thing happens when we walk into shul. This guy, he's not keeping kosher the way he should. This guy, he's, I don't know, he has his issues with Shabbos. This guy, he's not praying the three prayers a day the way he should. Each one has their faults. But when we stand up before Hashem, Hashem says, look, let's look at all their strengths. The faults, well, if this guy can't pray well, this guy prays well. If this guy doesn't keep Shabbos correctly, this one keeps Shabbos correctly. All together as a group, Hashem looks at the group and says, there's so much positive in this group. The negative, we don't harm one another with our negatives, but our positives, so I'll cover what you don't cover, you'll cover what I don't cover, and together as a team, when we get together in prayers, Hashem says, their prayer I like. And that's why Chazal told us that a person is best through of praying with the tzibu, and if you can't make that, at least the person should pray at the time that the tzibu is praying. Amar Rabbi Levi. Rabbi Levi taught us, kol mi sheyesh lo bet kneset b'iro, whoever has a synagogue, a shul in his city, he doesn't enter there to pray. He's called a bad neighbor. Hashem says, a person who doesn't enter shul, that's a bad neighbor. And this is also brought in halacha. You live in a city, there's a shul there, you're supposed to show up there. Not only that are you supposed to show up for prayer, but at least show up. Yom Kippur, Shabbos, show up. The more, the better. Not only that, a person who doesn't show up to shul, he's bringing upon himself and his children exile. As the pasuk says, those bad neighbors, people came to Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan is the great Amora of Israel who compiled the Jerusalem Talmud. So they came to him and they told him, there are old people in Babylon. So here's, wow, interesting. People make it to an old age in Babylon. He wondered, he said, how does that work? We say in Shema every day, we say in the Parsha of Tzitzis, Hashem says in Vayam Shema, keep the Torah, and then you'll live a long life in the land of Israel. So it seems like keeping the Torah only offers us a long life in Israel. So he said, how come there are old people in Babylon? I don't get it. So he said, tell me a little bit about them. And they filled him in, they told him, they come early to shul, they leave late to from shul, like the Sfaradim do still today. Us Ashkenazim have to learn from Sfaradim, we have to learn from each congregation. From the Sfaradim we have to learn how to light prayer. Ashkenazim, if you walk into shul and they say there's a bris today, there's no tachanon, and all the Ashkenazim go, yes! The Sfaradim say, why, what's wrong, why no tachanon? The Sfaradim come early, they say karbonos, they sit after shul, the shul is their home. You'll also notice the difference in how much they invest in shuls. Sfaradi shul, you walk into a Sfaradi shul, looks gorgeous. People are donating siddurim, they're donating chumashim, they donate lilu in shema. You walk into an Ashkenazi shul, they have to sell the aliyot, they try skimping every penny. It's Ashkenazim have to learn from Sfaradim on that point. And from Hasidim we have to learn how to be fervent in our prayer. You guys should take some time and go to some Hasidic shuls to see how they daven in the morning. Hasidim can yell in their prayer. They really get into it. So each one has what to learn from the other one.
I do not yell.
That's why you should go there.
No, oh. I don't want to yell.
Okay.
And especially that one of my Karl Bachian dances like Makon Meir does.
You know,
I like to sing all the Lechadoris, for example. That's all. And
there was,
I find when they're singing in here like 40 minutes, it's annoying and it's a waste of time.
There was the ancient way things worked was that after a woman would shech the chicken, she'd bring the chicken to the rabbi if she had questions in the kashrus. So the women didn't shech, the shochet would shech, he'd give to the woman would open up the chicken and she'd check that everything was okay. One of the things that you check is that the gallbladder is right. Right, you have the liver, a little red-brown piece. And on it you have a green piece called the gallbladder. Now the gallbladder is supposed to be very bitter. It's green, it's supposed to taste very bitter. if you lick it and it doesn't taste bitter, that means there's something wrong with the chicken, and halachically you're not allowed to eat the chicken. So a woman comes to the rabbi, and this is her chicken for Shabbos. Her whole family's coming, and she's not sure that the gallbladder tastes bitter enough. So she brings it to the rabbi, and she asks him, what's the halach with this gallbladder? So he licks it, and he says, it's not bitter. So the woman starts crying. She won't have chicken for Shabbos. And she says, Rebbe, believe me, it's bitter. It's bitter. Believe me, it's bitter. Sometimes in life, the question is, what do we feel? What do we feel?
Oh.
We can approach everything analytically, but things aren't just analytical. We have to know that if we're not yelling, it's not because we're having the same kavanah. Usually, it's because we don't care. We stand there in prayer. I did mine. What do you want from me? I showed up to shul. I said what I had to say. Is there more that you want from me? Says the Mishnah, yes. We're going to learn the Mishnah. We're going to learn the Mishnah. Look, what's a shul called? A shul is called Mekom Rina. We saw the Gemara earlier. A shul is called a place of song. So obviously, in David HaMelech's description of a shul, is that there's going to be song there. You know, when we're going to come to the Beis HaMikdash, they won't only sing. They're going to have musical instruments too. And everyone's going to sing.
It's not Beis HaMikdash.
Okay, but it's a Mikdash mat. There's an aspect that shul is, and we're supposed to have a healthy enough nefesh that we're moved by the song. The halacha even discusses that if a person is accustomed to being a chazan in one congregation, he can't necessarily be a chazan in another congregation because it's not right to the congregation. They're accustomed to their tunes, and that those are the tunes that will move them. So they should try to get a chazan who's going to say the tunes that they are used to.
But the tune does move it, only lecha dovid.
Okay. Back
so
to the Gemara.
I constantly go to Orisik not to hear all that howling.
Yeah, we have another minute to Ma'ariv. Yeah, we'll just finish the Gemara. When they told them they come early and late to shul, that they come before prayer and they stay late after prayer, he said that's why they live a long life. Like Rabbi Shua ben Levi told his children, come early to shul and leave late after shul, and then you'll live a long life. And on that note, we'll run to shul.